Hey, this is Dominique Henderson, your CFP on YouTube, guiding you to a career in financial services. This episode originally aired on my YouTube channel, which you can find at www.youtube.com/theYouTubeCFP. Make sure you join me each week as I share with you information on how to become a financial professional and the things you should be considering as you navigate down this career path. Without further ado, here's this week's episode.
Full disclosure, I actually started out wanting to do the CFA, which is the Chartered Financial Analyst designation. And after I failed the first part of that exam miserably, I continued my graduate degree and I realized that, you know, having a conversation with a peer, that the CFP was actually one of the better routes to go based on what I believed about financial planning. Today is all about gratitude. There have been two videos that most of you have found me through on this channel that are aspiring financial advisors. And I want to take some time to do something very special, and I'm going to just go through the comments and talk about what I was thinking about these videos, answer some questions, and let you get to know me just a little bit better. Get the pen and paper out. All right, let's go through the most watched video at this point, and let me give you some of the big ideas behind this video, maybe update some of the facts or things that I mentioned during the video that may need updating at this point. And then let's go through some of the comments and we'll do the same for the next one. So let's roll this one. So there are basically two types of avenues you can go down when it comes to financial advice. So that's the first update. There are more than just two avenues, obviously. So I think I wanted to more so give you the 30,000 foot view, but after countless conversations back and forth, there's probably about four ways. And I've talked about this before. I'll make sure to link that video up in the cards. But you basically have the independent route, which I am. I'm an independent registered investment advisor, and I'm fee only versus fee based. That's a whole nother discussion in the podcast. We'll give you some insight to that in just a bit. You can also be more of a captive wirehouse. So think about names like New York Life, Mass Mutual, Northwestern, or even Merrill Lynch or Morgan Stanley. So those are the big banks or big captive insurance houses that allow you to practice also as a financial advisor. You can also work through a broker-dealer, someone that offers securities and or financial products to the public. Maybe think about Edward Jones or LPL and those type of places. And then you can be a hybrid, which is the combination of an independent that has maybe some fee-only products and a broker-dealer. That's where you get the fee based from. So there's about four different paths, and you can take any one of those paths. We've all walked all types of ways into this industry and ended up where we are now. So there's not necessarily a good or bad path. It's just what works for you. So let's keep on rolling.
There are so many different what would be called layers between a financial advisor and the top level in the former model, the broker-dealer model, versus the independent model.
So let's unpack that a little bit. So as a registered rep, which is the way you're going to come in the industry, you'll get licensed, you know, maybe your life and health, your securities essentials, your Series 7 or 6, your Series 65, and so on. All these licenses that allow you to sell products and or services. You come in as a registered rep, especially as on the broker-dealer route. And then from there, what's going to happen is there's going to probably be, you know, some owner of the firm or some founder or whatnot. Now, in the broker-dealer model, usually the commissions that you earn from the products that you sell goes through some type of grid, and that dictates your payout. And sometimes there's some fluff, just to be honest, between there, and you may not get as much as you feel like you deserve based on what you sold. So in the independent model, there's not as much fluff. Right. You basically, whatever you sell, you're going to pretty much bring home 100% of that, which is a lot of people like that. However, for that luxury of being able to bring that home or for that extra margin, you typically are not going to have the support that you would get in the broker dealer channel, like for advertising or for marketing or maybe office space or software. All that stuff is coming out of your pocket as an independent RIA. So those are the layers that I'm mentioning when I talk about that. Let's keep going.
I love what I do, and I want to do it in a way that I feel that financial services should be rendered, right?
So let's go ahead and wind this up and then get into some comments. So I think No matter what path you choose, you have to make sure that the path is right for you. That's the most important thing. And beyond that, you have to kind of look at the economics of the situation. What's going to be, something that you can deal with or work within based on your runway, your financial runway, whether or not you have a spouse that works or something of that nature, to kind of support you in those first, 2 to 3, maybe even 5 years that are really critical as you're building your brand and you're building your book of business. So I'm just going to sort the comments by most recent first, and we'll go through a couple of those and we'll hop right into the next video. So P.S. Delport, is this a question? No, it's not, but thank you very much for the comment. You are a first advisor I've seen on YouTube that comes across as genuine, professional, intelligent, and on the level. So thank you very much for subscribing and watching, P.S. Delport. Matt Klinger says, thanks for the video, man. I'm in the middle of college pretty much, and I have been having a hard time figuring out what to study, what I think I want to work in. Financial advising sounds like something I'd enjoy working in, the planning part and getting to know the clients. So that's more of a comment too. You know, I would say that in this stage of, college student, internships and, being able to volunteer are really great ways to, I think, expose yourself to the profession. Junior Achievement, which actually has some financial literacy components to it. I know here in Dallas they do, but I believe in all the chapters nationally they have the same thing. Those are probably other good ways to find yourself inside the industry without actually working there, getting your toes wet, feet wet, if you will, to try to understand what it's going to be about, and what aspects of it that you may like. So that would be my recommendation from Matt. Jose says, hey, D, great content. I'm an advisor myself. What ways do you prospect? I think prospecting is, you should try a little bit of everything. I think nothing's off the table at this point, especially if you haven't hit your revenue goals. So I would say, phone calls, obviously, LinkedIn has been really huge for me. YouTube is also good. Social media and social media platforms. You got to really kind of find out where the audience that you want to work with hangs out, and then go hang out with them and ask them questions and see what's going on with them. You may blog and use things like that, of that nature. I think podcasting is something that's underutilized. I think it's a great platform for you to invite guests on and showcase what they do, and then ask them questions and get them interested possibly in what you're doing and share networks. So I think there's tons of ways to prospect. It's just, a matter of what you're going to be most comfortable with. Then you have more of the traditional stuff, which is like seminars and things of that nature, which may be a lot more dollars and maybe effort also that goes into that. But it boils down to what do you think you can be effective with in getting in front of the ideal client that you want to serve. All right, let's take a couple more. Walk by Faith and Budget. Just found your video today. It was super informative. I'm happy to see a black CFP since there aren't many out there, which is very true. So numbers are 300,000 people use the title financial advisor, about 85,000 CFPs, and less than 3% are people that are black and brown. So we got to do a better job on that. So great insight, and thank you for that. Also, let's see, she says, I'm graduating in December and I truly enjoy talking and learning about finance. I currently have a small financial coaching business where I help college students create a budget and set financial goals. Is this something I should list on my resume? Maybe. I think that at a minimum, so let me tell you what I would be looking for as an employer for somebody that's wanting to work in this industry, maybe an intern or somebody that would come along as a support role for me. I would be looking for relevant experience. I think you have to do the resume. It's one of those kind of check the box type of deals. But when it comes down to it, it's a filtering process, right? So if I see two resumes in front of me and both of them want to work for me, and one of them has relevant experience, the other one has experience that is not relevant, I'm going to be more gravitating towards the person that has relevant experience. So I think you just need to find a way that whatever you were doing in the past, if it was not related to finance, crafting it, not lying or anything, but just crafting that language in such a way that shows it's relevant for the job that you're applying, or just leave it off. That would be my advice. How did you handle applying for entry-level jobs when the job description asked for 2+ years of experience? So, some of those jobs you're going to have to apply to, and they're just going to say no. Other jobs won't require as much experience. My very first gig, entry-level, didn't require as much experience. It just required for me to have a finance degree, which I had. So I got lucky in that sense. I think you just have to keep on looking, and hopefully you can come across something that suits your fancy in that regard. One more, and then let's pop to the next. So this is by Paige Ernest. Thank you, Paige, for leaving a comment. This video really helped me consider the career. I'm an accountant at the moment. I'm looking to get more fulfillment out of my career. I thought financial advising would be a great lateral. I'm guessing she would say would be a great lateral move, but how are the hours? Is there a lot of overtime in your job? Do you get adequate benefits like PTO and health insurance? Okay, so I think we have to kind of segment whether or not you're working for yourself or whether you're working for someone. If you're working for someone, I would imagine health insurance and paid time off is maybe standard, but it's going to be according to whatever that employer does. So I can't really speak to that. Is there a lot of overtime in your job? You probably want to ask my wife that. I work a lot, but I love what I do. So it's not that big a deal for me. We're in a situation where we don't have small children in the house. We don't have a lot of outside responsibilities that are yanking at our time. And we're at the stage where we can, you know, put a lot of time into our career. So that's a little different for everybody. So I don't know what the overtime aspect of this job would look like. I would just say it's extensive. How are the hours? This is not, I would say entrepreneurship is not a 9-to-5 thing. If you plan to, you know, be in business for yourself, don't expect that. You probably need to work for somebody. That's just the harsh truth of it. I would say though, my experience has been that, you know, 8-to-10-hour job, I would say is kind of reasonable. Those have been kind of the hours that I've worked. You know, I would say the 50-hour work weeks are pretty typical in this industry. And if you're an accountant now, I don't know, maybe you're probably pretty used to that. So hopefully that helps, and we'll move on to the next video. Hey, Dominique here, and I hope you are really enjoying this week's episode. Look, if you're a current or aspiring financial professional and you'd like to join a community of like-minded individuals that I'm sharing my 20 plus years of experience with, make sure you visit my website at www.djh-capital.com for more information. Now back to this week's episode. All right. In this video, which I'm in my hat and hoodie, which my spouse would just hate, but you were getting authentic Dominique on this one. I wanted to go into the actual breakdown of what the CFP is and maybe why I got the CFP. So let me just open up by saying there are plenty of designations. I've chosen the Certified Financial Planner. My friend Patrick Brewer would say certified fantastic person. I think there are a lot of fantastic people that are in this profession that have the CFP designation. But what it really centered around is my passion for helping people with comprehensive planning. Notice I said comprehensive planning, not, you know, wealth management or investment management or asset allocation or any of those things, because I think those are all components under a great comprehensive financial plan. And so when I was looking at the designation, and full disclosure, I actually started out wanting to do the CFA, which is the Chartered Financial Analyst designation. And after I failed the first part of that exam miserably, I continued my graduate degree, and I realized that, you know, having a conversation with a peer, that the CFP was actually one of the better routes to go based on what I believed about financial planning. So I don't cover a lot of that in this video. However, I do kind of go into some of the reasons that I got that exam or got that designation and what it takes in there. But I want to give you a little bit behind the scenes of kind of the up-to-date, you know, full mosaic of what that looks like. What I didn't highlight in the video that I want to highlight now is that there are tons of designations, and why I pick CFP really has to do with the fact that I am a comprehensive financial planner at heart, meaning that I believe in comprehensive financial planning, and I think that most relationships that are successful with a client reaching their goals is born out of a very thorough, holistic plan. You may realize that, you know, you may not want to go down such a traditional route. You may want to do something more non-traditional. It doesn't really matter. I think at the end of the day, you have to realize that whatever it is, you have to have a passion around it. You have to be able to motivate yourself and push through all the hard times, because those will come. And if you can do that with whatever designation you choose, if that is even a designation, I think that's okay. Because at the heart of it, people need help. And if you can get the solution to them that they need, it really doesn't matter how you do it, as long as you do it in a legal, moral, and ethical manner, fashion. So I'm going to go into some of the things, highlight some of the ideas behind this video, specifically the career path and what it looks like with what you have to get as a CFP, and then we'll hop into the questions. All right. And today I want to share a little bit more about my journey as a financial advisor, specifically my decision to become a CFP almost 3 years ago, and give you some of those things that you may want to know or may need to know if you're on the fence or thinking about this as a career. So let's insert a point here. I was asked this, well, like, why CFP after, you know, 15 years in the business? And I think one of the just really transparent things is that the public perceives CFP as someone that knows their stuff. And although that doesn't necessarily bring in clients from a marketing standpoint, it could, but I haven't noticed that. I think you have to play the game, so to speak. And what I mean by that is, if you're in an industry that requires a certain thing, or you're seeing that there's this, you know, movement towards it, don't fight the feeling. Don't try to be so contrarian in that. If you see that more CFPs are becoming the standard, then that's what you probably need to do. Or if you see, you know, I don't know what the relatable metaphor would be in another industry, because I'm in finance, but I think you get my drift in that. If you want to be a planner, if you want to be looked at as viable, as competent, as somebody that knows their stuff, then this is something that you probably need to pursue and look into. And so that was one of the reasons that, you know, before I started my business, I was like, this is probably something that is worthwhile doing. At that point, I had been doing it a long time, and I had industry experience. I had a good resume. I had a graduate degree. But this was that kind of final thing that I wanted to kind of check off to show, to demonstrate to my potential clients that I did go through the rigor of this, and I've chosen to set myself apart by saying, this is the standard that I want to hold myself to.
Is a career as a CFP for you? Well, kind of depends. If you really love people, yes, it probably is.
So I touched on the softer side of this. Let's get down to brass tacks, because I didn't really get into this. You probably need to dedicate a good 18 to 2 years of your life for this. 18 months to 2 years. I think when you kind of consider the fact that you've got to get this experience requirement, right? It's going to take you a while. It's going to take you 2 to 3 years to do that. Depending on if you've been maybe doing this through college, through internships, it may be a little less. However, you're going to have to pass the exam, which you're going to have to set aside time to study that. You're going to have to go through all the educational courses offered by some program or some college that allows you to sit for the exam. So you've got some time and that you're going to have to put in, and it's not easy. And I don't want you to get the mistake of, oh, if I just like people, I could do the CFP. No, there's some rigor part to it. And you need to like people also. That's a component that I think would be helpful. I would also say, you know, I largely did this video from the standpoint or from the lens of an entrepreneur owning my own business. But that's not to say that you couldn't be a CFP working in, a customer service center like Vanguard or Schwab or something like that, because they do hire for those positions. And you can have more of a support role. You don't have to be front facing, you know, doing the client interactions and things of that nature, because that may not be your personality type. And that's perfectly fine. I would just say, though, set aside realistically about 2 years of your life to prepare for, study, and pass the exam in order to earn the designation, and then you'll have to do the experience, obviously, in order to qualify for using the marks. All right, let's keep moving.
Now, what does a CFP actually do? Well, I did a video, I've done a couple of videos, but I'll link the day in the life of a CFP up in the card so you can check that out.
So yeah, let's unpack this. So I've done a couple of day in the life, so definitely look at those. I think mine, of course, is more entrepreneurial, and I want to give both sides of that, because I know everybody's not going to start their own business. Everybody shouldn't start their own business. So I think you should be, here's some skills that you should be adept at. So you should be adept at listening. be really adept at listening, because you may have this whole tool set of things in your mind about how to apply ratios and statistics and all that kind of stuff, but you don't even know if that's what's necessarily going to solve the problem that the person has. So ask a lot of questions. Be a really good listener in trying to ascertain where they're at, where they're trying to go, so that you can appropriately fill in the gaps and not just stuff stuff into what you think is a cookie cutter solution for this particular person. Obviously, you got to be competent. You got to know, you know, retirement. You got to, you know, just formulas. And a lot of this stuff will be, I guess, given to you by software. But there are some things that, you know, probably you should be up on as far as, you know, what are some good ratios for people to know as far as how much house should they buy when they're looking to buy a house. That's probably a good ratio to know. You know, what how much should they be saving annually in order to get to a certain goal in life, depending on when they want to retire? You know, things of that nature, I would just stay, you know, abreast on that. And usually the job is going to do that for you because you'll be dealing with so many different clients. The other thing that I think is really key is being able to not necessarily be in the markets per se, like looking at stock tickers or, you know, Dow Jones or the S&P every day, but just be abreast, right? You know what's going on. Maybe have some type of digest that you read. You may read the Wall Street Journal, things like that, but maybe just be able to kind of speak the vernacular. And here I will insert here that most importantly, you don't have to know everything. Even though I said all that, you don't have to know everything. It's okay to say, yeah, you know, I don't know. That's a great question. Let me get back to you on that. Is there a certain time frame in which you need the answer? That's perfectly fine too. I've survived for quite a bit of time using just that stanza right there. Get it? Let's go into some questions. Let's sort by most recent. All right. So Kamika, hopefully I'm pronouncing that name correctly, says, "What are your thoughts on certification versus a master's degree in financial planning?" Okay. So I think there's two different things here. It depends on what you want to do. It boils down to what you want to do. Like if you want to go into academia and you want to teach financial planning or financial coaching, or you want to raise the next generation of financial advisors, I think you're going to have to go with a master's degree. You may even have to go a doctorate. I actually have a buddy who works at the flagship program in the nation at Texas Tech, and he is a PhD candidate. And he's going to do both, actually. He's a weirdo like that, but he's going to do both. So he's working on his PhD, and he's also got, he's a CFP. That's rare, though. I would say that's rare that you find that a lot of people that are doing academia as well as trying to run a practice, not to say it can't be done. Now let's flip that. If you don't want to go into teaching how to be a financial planner, I would say that the certification is probably the way to go. Why waste the time and money on more education when education is not necessarily what's going to help you run a business? Getting out there and finding clients is what's going to help you run a business. And then, like I said earlier, the designation just helps put that little stamp that the public recognizes you as, you know, a fiduciary, as someone that is competent, as someone that knows their stuff. So that would be what I would say. So you got to really kind of decide, Kamika, what you want to do. Do you want to teach it or do you want to actually practice it? Because those are two different things. Edric says, "I need help. I am not on the field. I'm not on the field yet, but will graduate in August 2021. I will get my certificate in December 2020. I would like to know where and how I can get the experience and what are the avenues in this field in Florida." Well, Florida is probably like any other state in that I would start with the internships while I'm in school, looking for internships, which means you probably need to talk to all your advisors and, you know, things, people of that nature that can help you. Make sure you attend the career fairs, talk to the companies there that are represented at the career fairs and ask them about their openings and their positions. I would connect with those people on LinkedIn. I would do all that stuff to kind of secure an internship. If that does not work out, I would volunteer places like Junior Achievement, and there are other. I would even say you could, instead of interning, if you don't get hired as an internship, to see what financial planning firms would allow you to volunteer, so you can get exposure to the business, and that allows you opportunities for experience too. So there's a lot of different ways to get experience in this business. Sometimes they're not the most glamorous, but at the end of the day, they would be experience. I would say you should, if you haven't already, download my 10 tips to jumpstart your career. That should be linked in the show notes above, or you can just go to ddhcapital.com and click on the button that says I want to be a financial advisor or a financial professional, and it'll link to that. So those are hopefully a couple of resources to help you there. T. Marie says, "Awesome videos. I get great energy, I can't read today, from talking about finances. I started in insurance, life and health over 10 years ago, but started working in nonprofit for the last 6 years and haven't used my license. I just kept up the C credits. Do you have a recommendation for the best way to transition back into financial services? I'm ultimately interested in becoming a CFP." Almost the same as I would say, Edric, is I think you have to start with volunteering if you can't get hired, because you need the experience in order to be a CFP. Remember that hours requirement, 6,000 hours you have to have. So, you know, you kind of figure normal working years, like 2,000 hours. So that's almost the equivalent of 3 years. That's why I say if you're in school or you're doing internships, that's a good way to kind of circumvent that, because you get to, work while you're in school, and you can add those hours to, as long as somebody that you're working for is a qualified financial professional giving financial advice, you should be able to use those hours while you're interning. Okay, Rudini, we'll do a couple more. In my country, Indonesia, it's almost impossible to get $40,000 salary due to the people do not really understand how important a financial planner is. Any idea? I'm a CFP holder and experienced an investment firm for 4 years. Should I find a job to another country like U.S. or Canada? Thank you for your information. Man, this is tough. I think the laws of supply and demand are at work here, in that if people don't demand what you have as a skill, then you can't get paid for it. That's just a simple, brass tacks of it. So I think what you may want to consider is relocating. I don't know how difficult that may be for you and your family. But yeah, you would want to migrate to a place that values the skill set that you have, or try to reinvent your skill set where you are. Maybe they don't value the CFP, and maybe you can do financial coaching or consulting, or something like that. Maybe you can work for a firm that has, has need for a CFP, or maybe even like a traditional chief financial officer role or something like that. Maybe those things would help. Raymond Medley, do you mentor? Yes, I do. Selectively, though, as most people do. I think the best thing for you to do is probably to hop into the Facebook group. You can get that information by going to my website, djh-capital.com. Click on the I Want to Be a Financial Professional, and there's going to be some info there for you to consume. One more question. I have a background working in account.is. I don't know what that means. Becoming a financial advisor, a good path for me. I really want to help people. I think that if you really want to help people, that's a great start, but you still have to be competent in the skill. And because I don't really understand, maybe this is a misprint or something, a background working in account, maybe that's accounting. Accounting has some very transferable skills. There's a lot of CPAs, certified public accountants, that have become CFPs, or financial advisors. So I think that's definitely a transferable skill. It just a matter of if you're going to be able to A, get the designation, if that's what you want to do, and then B, build a book of business or work for somebody that has a book of business servicing those type of accounts and clients that you want to serve. Wow, that was really fun, and I hope you enjoyed it. This was all about reaching out to you guys to thank you, first of all, for watching those videos and reaching out to me. It's been really, really fun to interact with you. And hopefully what we did today was helpful. May not have gotten to your question or comment, but know that I appreciate it. Please charge it to my head and not my heart. And we'll see you next time. Bye-bye for now. Well, that wraps up this week's episode, and I hope you were able to glean at least one takeaway that will help you on your path. You know what? I'd really love to hear what it was that I said that may have helped you. Feel free to drop me an email at info@djh-capital.com. That's info@djh-capital.com. One last thing, my friend, it would really help the podcast if you would leave a review on the platform that you're enjoying it on. I'd really appreciate it, and it will help more financial professionals like yourself find out about what we're doing here. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.